Good morning, and welcome to yet another episode of Popping Off with Phil, the podcast. So thanks for tuning in. Today is a special episode, and we're going to call it the prologue. Only people from college are going to get that joke, but nonetheless, hey, it is what it is. I wanted to do this episode to set up the next couple of episodes because it will be my first series. It's going to be a series because there's no way for me to conclude in the micro content environment everything that I kind of want to say. And so I figured I would do a prologue, which would kind of give you the backstory about how I ended in this situation. And then I would kind of unravel things that I learned along the way and things that I know now to avoid some of those pitfalls. Now, when we talk about heartbreak is one of those necessary evils, is one of those unavoidable situations that we're all going to find ourselves in at one time or another. Whether it is the puppy love stage when you're very, very young, or that first relationship as an adult, those college age relationships, heartbreak is part of it. And heartbreak is simply a consequence of falling in love. We all know consequences can be good or bad. And so there are good things that happen from falling in love and bad things that happen from falling in love. And one of those bad things is heartbreak. But to be quite honest, heartbreak could be a good thing too. Nonetheless, semantics, I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about that because there are highs and lows, ups and downs, makeups, breakups, reunitings. All of these things happen in the course of falling in love, but on that road to heartbreak, which I hate to say it, in a lot of cases is inevitable. You know, some people get that storybook high school sweetheart, that college love that lasts for years and years and years and on and on and on. And some people even get through high school and college in love with the same person and then find themselves married. And after all of those years, wind up breaking up. And a lot of it has to do with a person's age and a person's growth and development and the changes that happen as we come into our own as adults. But nonetheless, it happens. And I am no stranger to heartbreak. And in addition to being no stranger to heartbreak, I know that it shapes the way a person thinks and operates moving forward. Sometimes heartbreak takes people out of here and it puts them in this place of, you know, being very skeptical of ever experiencing that euphoric, that charged feeling of being in love, which I think is a beautiful thing because, as the songwriter said, the greatest thing in all the world is just to love and be loved in return. Let's put some stars by that, be loved in return, because unrequited love, which is a little bit of what I'm going to talk about, is not the same thing. And so I just want to kind of talk a little bit about it. Well, I want to tell the story so that you understand why I've come to the conclusions about what one learns, or what specifically I learned from heartbreak. So here goes. Several years ago, I received a message on one of the many Christian Mingle sites that said, "You got some sexy lips." I'm no stranger to compliment. No, I'm joking. Everyone loves a compliment, especially one that is unprovoked. You know, you're randomly sitting down, someone sends you a message. And I believe at this time in my life, my profile was, it was probably semi-complete. You know, like I probably said a few things, you know, trying to get someone's attention, hopefully somebody of substance, because at the time I think that's what I was looking for, would respond. This person didn't have a picture up, didn't have a lot of information on their page, but of course that sparked a conversation, you know. And typically when someone compliments me on some type of physical attribute and they don't have a picture up, my response is like, well, I would love to render the same compliment, but unfortunately I'm unable to because there's nothing here for me to view. And that gets different responses. But eventually we get to the point where there's some level of picture exchange. This didn't happen instantaneously, but we continue to converse. Because a compliment is a gateway. So we had conversation, I think we eventually got to the point where we did actually exchange, or he actually shared a picture. And bingo, because this doesn't happen often. Normally when somebody doesn't have a picture up and there's a lot of conversation and they seem to be beating around the bush about sharing a picture, I'm private, I can't afford it to let you see what I look like because of my job and what I do. I'm scared you'll you're a psycho and you'll screenshot my picture and share it with the world. You know, all of these reasons as to why they want to have conversation with someone on a site that's meant for hooking up and not share a picture of their face are typically the excuses you get. And so the expectation of when this person reveals themselves is typically extremely low. Another lesson I learned over the years. And in this instance, I was pleasantly surprised because this person was not ugly. It was actually quite fine. And I was like, okay, all right. You know, don't lose your cool. So we continued to talk and we eventually exchanged numbers. Don't know how we got to the number exchange portion, but you know, after a while, you know, and you talk to somebody on a site, this is my thought process, especially if you're looking for something a little bit more substantive, which I was, again, at that time. I try to remove them from that space. Now we have things like Kick and, you know, WhatsApp. Like, there's a lot of ways that you can, you know, kind of converse with someone without giving out your number. Yeah, I mean, they got Google numbers, all types of things. But I try to remove them from that particular medium because I feel like being on that site incites mischief. And not to say that, you know, obviously when you're on there, you're looking for mischief. But we go through phases where we are looking for different things. And I was just in this phase where I was looking for something different at this time. I was trying to defy this thought process that these Christian Mingle sites, and I call them all Christian Mingle because everybody purports that they're something that they're not. But anyway, I was trying to defy this thought process that these sites were strictly sexual encounter sites and that you couldn't find a relationship, make a good friend, or anything off of these sites. And so we exchanged numbers, and I remember driving in my car one day and randomly decided to call him. And he answered the phone, and I was like, hey, you know, this is such and such, such and such from the site. What's up? And his first response was like, man, your voice is high. I was like, yes, yes, no, I'm a tenor. I get this all the time. It's a placement thing. Anyway, we continued the conversation. He was getting ready to go to movies with friends, and I was like, well, hit me up later. We really should figure out a time where we could get together and meet. Continued to talk. We finally met. I don't remember exactly when we started talking, but I know that we met in July. We met at the mall and went to go grab some food at a local restaurant. So, you know, that first moment of meeting someone in person, because either all of your dreams flourish or they die. And that's just the way that it works. Either they are everything that, because pictures can tell lies. So when you meet somebody in person, either they are everything that you thought that they would be, or they are a massive disappointment. You know, and normally when you meet someone, the first couple of exchanges are, oh, you really do look like your picture. I'm so grateful. And I got there early, and so I was kind of waiting, didn't know what to expect. Saw him drive past me. And I knew it was him because I could see him in his car. And I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. Thank you. He does look exactly like his picture, which is great because his picture was great. Got out the car, walked to the car. Great swag. He had on like a Nike shirt that said, I'm always on top of things or something like that. Which, you know, of course, is that whole double entendre. You know what that means. That's why people buy these shirts. Although, sometimes it's... It's just costume. It's drag. But anyway, Got in the car, grabbed some food, had a really good conversation. He was divorced and had children and had moved to Atlanta because he wanted to start a new chapter in his life. He wanted to live his life as a gay man, you know? And so he moved away from his family. Obviously, he was divorced and, you know, his ex-wife had custody. So, you know, it wasn't a situation where he wouldn't see his son, because he actually saw his son quite frequently. He spent a lot of time going back and forth to his home state to be a part of different things. His son and his nephew, who he also took a very active role in raising. So he was always back and forth for a game or some type of event. It's almost like, well, why the fuck do you just stay there if you're going to be there all the time? But nonetheless, ain't nobody shitting on nobody trying to be a good dad. So in that conversation, he revealed that during the summer, regardless of where he was, he normally would, his son and his nephews would normally come and spend the summer with him. And, you know, that's something that he really looked forward to. They really looked forward to. They did all types of activities. You know, there was that whole, we just gonna lay around and play video games and scratch our balls type activity. But then there was also, let's hit up the museums, the World of Coke. Let's go to, you know, the botanical gardens. Let's do different cultural events or cultural things here as well. And so we had this dinner date, and he basically was saying, or dinner meet, whatever you want to call it. And he was saying that he was going to be leaving for, you know, he's going to be hitting the road later on, earlier part of that week, to go pick them up and come back. Because it was just easier and more cost efficient to just drive, to go get them and then drive back. So I was like, cool. So, you know, he basically was saying that he wasn't out to his family. I think he may have had one sister that he was out to. Maybe not. Not at the time. That happened later. He wasn't out to his family. Of course, he's with his kids. And, you know, coming out is a process. It's a process that is very individual. People have to go through it as they will and as they do. And so I understand that, because I didn't see him as a DL person. He just, which technically, he was more of a phone booth person. So he was out of the closet, but he still needed some type of shelter or enclosure. So he was in the phone booth, because you could see, and which was cool. So, you know, obviously he's spending time with his son, he's spending time with his nephews, nobody's gonna interrupt that. So he's like, I'm pretty much gonna be off the grid during that time. So I expected that. But we continued to talk. So we talked pretty much all summer, you know, different things. There was a time where we actually were gonna get together and go to the movies. Because his son would have been gone, but his nephew still would have been with him. And so we were going to do that, but they ended up falling through, so that didn't actually happen, which was perfectly fine. Nonetheless, September rolls around, and in my mind, I'm like, well, you know, we've kept in communication, because I thought that that was important, because I was like, over a summer, anything could happen. 2 months, something else could happen, and I didn't want to lose that, because I thought that we were having a really, you know, we had a really good time. We kind of hit it off. The conversation was cool, and so I was like, you know, this could probably develop into something. I guess in the back of your head, you're always like, well, at least I'll gain a friend. Ain't nobody really looking for friends, but friendship is an important step on the road to being in love with someone, because, to be quite honest, a lot of people have great communication in terms of body language and sex, but no communication in any other room of the house. One of my favorite lines from A Different World, it was a conversation that Whitley and Dwayne were having together. And he basically was like, we've never had a problem in the bedroom. We've always been able to communicate in that space. It's outside of that space where we have a problem. Things fall apart. And that has stuck with me because, that has stuck with me because the reality of the situation is there are so many people who get into these relationships based on the passion of a moment and then find themselves like, but I really don't like this motherfucker. And why did I not know this? And that's because sex clouds things, mostly judgment. and the ability to discern whether or not a person is even worth investing that type of time. But I digress. September rolled around. In my mind, it was going to be this instantaneous, you know, let's get back together. And it took a minute. But we did get back and we started hanging out. We would come over, we would watch TV. We would, you know, go out, grab a bite. It was all cool. I feel like something else happened during that time. But not that I recall. Like, I feel like there was something else that happened. Oh, like, there was this one club that did, like, this First Friday event that people really liked to go to. Because it was a regular club any other day. But the First Friday, it catered to the LGBTQIA plus community. And so a lot of guys like to go there because it was a different vibe. It wasn't your standard club vibe. It was, you know, a different type of guy, if you will, that came to this particular event. So I ended up going to one of those events one Saturday and meeting him there with another friend of mine. So, like I said, all good, you know. I remember apartment searching with him. Like, we really just started to kind of form this friendship. But very early on, because I had made this mistake before, because I am a victim of poor timing, I had basically said to him, like, listen, hey, I remember us going out to breakfast, and I was like, listen, I just want to put this out here so it is known. I like you. I'm attracted to you. I would really like to entertain the idea of us dating. And I don't want to be in a situation where I end up being friend zoned too soon or not a consideration whenever you decide that this is what you want. Because our initial conversation is, you know, I think that I might want to date. I think that I might want to be in this situation. He was like dead set against like gay marriage, but you know, it was that whole concept of having been married, the bitterness of having been married and then being divorced. Although the reality of the situation is you got divorced because you're gay, not because marriage didn't work and it didn't work because you're gay. But nonetheless, there was this bitterness about that process of going through divorce and what that meant. And so he was one of those gays that was like, I don't believe in gay marriage. So whatever. But he did want companionship. So that was the conversation. But then I guess at some point in time, it morphed into, I don't know if I'm really ready to be in a relationship, because my first gay experience was not a great one. You know, it was one of those types of things. You know, or the first gay relationship that he was in was not a great one. And so, whatever. So I'm like, cool. I'm a patient guy. I think you're attractive. It ain't like I've run across anybody else who is worth, you know, not trying to develop a relationship with you. So it's like, whatever. Anyway, time marches on. We're hanging out more. I'm giving a lot of myself. And I'll delve into this more deeply when I kind of get into the series. But a lot of myself emotionally, a lot of myself spiritually, making myself available in that way. You know, physically being present, and financially. Because even though this person checked all my proverbial boxes in terms of like education, whatever the case is, they were in an interesting financial position, which they initially said, hey, I left the job, but I'm good. Okay. So great. You know, they were in a situation where they had saved a lot of money. They decided that they wanted to do something different with them, with their lives. They no longer wanted to work in science in the way that they were working in science. And so they had resigned from their position, moved down here. But, you know, they were able to sustain themselves for a period of time. However, you know, things were getting thin. And as things get thin, we were in that place where it was like, yeah, we can hang out. And I am a firm believer that if you invite someone out, you should foot the bill. Especially initially. But, you know, at some point in time, if we're not dating and we're just friends, there should be this whole, you know, I'll pay my half. And we had some instances like that. But it really got to a point where it was like I was footing the bill. But when you like somebody and when you're courting somebody in your mind, because I believe that dating happens naturally. Exclusivity is a conversation. But after you start to see somebody over a course or a period of time and you're seeing someone pretty regularly, y'all date. You know, whether you call the spade a spade or not, it's still a spade. And so that was kind of going on. I was just giving of myself a lot. right at the turn of the new year, he got sick, like hospitalized sick. There was an issue with his bilirubin being off. He was jaundiced the whole nine yards. And we had been talking, but he had never mentioned that he wasn't doing well. And then he ended up in hospital. So I went to go see him in hospital, took him food, actually left watch night service, because at this point I wasn't singing in the choir. Left watch night service, you know, rushed down to Grady. Hey, what's going on? Are you okay? Spent some time with him. Some other friends were there. I think I probably went back one other time. And that was like the beginning to the end, because I made myself extremely available to him and he took advantage of that. But again, when you like somebody and when your like starts to escalate and you start to feel different feelings about this person, like, oh, when this person calls, I get excited. When I see their name, I get excited. When we get a chance to spend time together, just the thought process of planning an event makes me excited. You realize that you're starting to get what I call feels. Not necessarily love, because I do feel like there are stages. I feel like there are, there's a physical attraction to a person. And that is that lust. It's like, oh my goodness, do you see this person? Because we see people all the time. And the first thought that comes to mind isn't, oh my goodness, I would really marry that person. It's like, shit, we could really get some stuff popping, because physically they fit this mold. Then you kind of move from lust to like infatuation. Now you're like, the idea of being with this person is so enticing and so exhilarating. You know what I'm saying? And that's an interesting but very dangerous space to be caught in, because infatuation is a fleeting emotion, and it's also the foundation of it is not substantial. And then after you move past those phases, and there's different ways to move past those phases, either, you know, you get to the moment where you consummate this lust infatuation, and so it's like, oh, this is good, this is great, or this is not great, or whatever the case is, or, you know, something just happens and you end up finding yourself kind of growing apart from that particular person. But then after you get through those emotions, you can actually get to the whole concept of, no, I really think that I like this person, that there's a possibility that I could love this person. And so I never got my moment of consummation in terms of me and this individual were never sexually intimate. We were intimate in terms of being in each other's space, slept in the same bed, would lightly kiss each other on the lips, those types of things. But we were never like, you know, tonguing it out, making out, feeling on each other's booties type. It was never like that. And so, most people would say that I'm insane. And I think what it is most people have either never been in that position, because they're those type of people where like, no, this is going down, or they're embarrassed to say that they've been in that position and have given so much of themselves. This is a teachable moment. So I'm okay being the fool in order to teach the lesson. We were never sexually intimate, but I was still doing all of these things. And some of it was, I want this guy to see that I'm worth it. And so that continued on. Birthdays came, had cakes made, was starting to spend more time with him and his friends because they were having different events. He would invite me, you should come out, you know. So I remember having a conversation with one of his friends, like, what's up with your boy? Like, what's the problem? Like, obviously I'm around all the time. I'm at your house multiple times a week. He's been sick. I've brought medicine. I've bought food to make sure that he's eating. Like, what more does a brother have to do for this guy to be like, hey, you a real one? You know what I'm saying? He was like, you know, you just got to be patient with him. It takes time. He's been through this. What friends would say? What a friend would say to someone else. You know what I'm saying? Because it's ballsy to even have this conversation with someone else's best friend, because you know this conversation is going to come up. And apparently it had. And apparently other people had mentioned to him, like, so what's up? You say you want all of these things and you're looking for all of these things in a person, and you got this person right in front of you. What's stopping you from moving forward? What's stopping you from saying, okay, let's date and let's date exclusively? Let's try to see if this would work. Bullshit response: I don't want to ruin the friendship. So let me tell you, because I won't let this moment pass. I'll come back to this when I break down what I learned from heartbreak. But the reality of the situation is that whole I don't want the friendship to be ruined is bullshit. It is code for I'm not into you. And that's the way that you should read it. Because the reality of the situation is friendship is an important part of any relationship. It's a foundational principle. You are not going to have a good relationship if there isn't some aspect of friendship. And the reality of this is the person that you're with, your mate, your spouse, your partner, should be held to the same standard, base standard, that you hold any of your friends to. If you expect your friends to show up, to be present, you should expect no less from a person that you plan on building a life with. Even if that person is no more than a consideration at that moment, those are things that they should willingly want to do and they should be present for. And if you don't hold them to the same standard, you are already setting yourself up for ruins. Okay, that's my quick lesson for today. But I just want to put that out there. Nonetheless, continue to go on and mull on. He's met friends. I've met friends. There's so many things that I learned on the back end about his attraction to other friends of mine and me not knowing because they didn't feel comfortable having that conversation with me. Because at this point, now I'm defensive of him. So anybody who says anything that is against him, we now got a problem. And these are my friends, mind you. But when you are in this space and when you're falling for someone or realize you have fallen for someone, then your mind is warped. And I had never been in this space before. This was extremely new to me and for me. So, you know, I had made it up in mind. This is going to work. You know, I don't give a fuck what y'all say. This is going to work. Listen, let me tell you how into this dude I was. I told my mama. I said, listen, I've met this man. I was like, girl, listen, I showed her pictures. We had a conversation. She was like, well, you know, this must be serious if you are. Jackie was so funny, child. This must be serious if you are telling me about him. You know, I'm like, he's a Gemini, mama, just like you. Blah, blah. That should have been another red flag. He's a Gemini, just like you. Blah, 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 this, blah, 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 this. She's like, well, you know what? Well, whenever you're ready to meet him, I would like to meet him. And whenever you're ready for me to meet him, I would like to meet him. I mean, you know that you're in it when you tell your mama. Like, I honestly, you know, because me and my mama had never had this level of conversation before. Yes, we had the conversation about me being gay, but it was so many years ago that I think she brushed it under the rug. And in her mind, she was still fantasizing and romanticizing this whole idea of me being married and her having grandchildren. Which were all still possibilities, just not in the way that she envisioned it. Nonetheless, we go on, we go on, we go on, we go on, we go on. Finally, we hit one of our first major bumps. And it is I had gotten off of Christian Mingles. I had stopped talking to people that I had had relationships with in the past. I was literally like, listen. It's kind of like that whole moment when Whitney Houston told Bill Cosby, I can't be on your show because I'm going to be a singer. I'm going to be a star. That's how I was. It was like, listen, this has been fun, but I'm about to be a married, kept man. And I can't be in this space with you because I don't want to give the wrong impression to my future husband. And so I was getting myself out of situations left and right. And we had that conversation about not really being on the sites. His response was, I wasn't having sex with other people. Listen, let me tell you, I was... Get thee to the nunnery. I was literally setting myself up for this life. Nobody asked me to do any of these things. These are things that I was doing myself. That's another lesson. Bookmark that. And so we weren't supposed to be on sites. I happened to be at his house one day. His iPad was going off. Jacked messages left and right. And I was like, this motherfucker here. Now, granted, we ain't had no conversation. So to be quite honest, I didn't have a need to be angry. But I was in my feelings. And so I was pissed. So what did I do? What you shouldn't do. I started a Jack profile. And just so I can see if I could scout him out. And I found him. And I began to send messages to him. Because he didn't have a picture up and neither did I. And he actually responded. He claims, or claimed at the time, that he knew who I was after I asked a certain series of questions. But I was just asking questions about relationship and where he was. Had he met anybody? What was going on? It was like a Spanish Inquisition type shit. FBI sent you in a room. Like, I got questions. I'm trying to build a case. I eventually revealed my picture. And he was like, oh, I knew it was you, and blah, 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 this, and blah, blah, that. And I was like, well, what's up? Because you said you weren't on these sites. You said you were looking for this. You said you were looking for that. And he was like, I'm just not ready at this moment. Like, I think you're cool, but I really just want us to be friends at this moment. I'm not saying that we won't ever get back to this space. I'm just not there right now. Why did he tell me that? I had a nervous breakdown. And I don't cry. I'm not a crier. People have died, and I don't cry. But in this space, I was upset. I was writing, writing these cryptic ass Facebook and Instagram posts and using lyrics from Mariah Carey songs. Like, I was over it. And I was like, well, like, I don't know what to do with this. So he was like, I'm going to give you some space to figure this out because, you know, I'm not trying to hurt your feelings or whatever the case is like that. And I was like, that was good. And we had started to like play games, like Words with Friends, Scramble with Friends. And so we weren't talking, we were playing these games. I deleted those games. Didn't delete his number, but I didn't call. And I initiated a lot of our conversations, although he was very responsive. I was beside myself. I was sad. I was at work crying. I mean, it was really a really bad thing, but it was like, I literally felt like my heart was broken. And so we went maybe a month, 2 months, nothing was going on. And then I got this random game request because I think I eventually got back on the game. I didn't delete the game. I just didn't start anymore. Like, I stopped once we finished games, I stopped playing them. And then there was a point in time where I would like reject the game. And I got a message on the game app like, I miss my friend. I really miss my friend. And we started this whole dialogue in the game app. And he was like, you know, I just really miss having my friend, miss having somebody to talk to, blah, 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 blah. So in my mind, I'm like, if this person is saying, I miss my friend, I really miss having you around, you know, I really want you back in my life, I'm like, okay, maybe this is a gateway of me getting on, us getting on the same page and the track that I want to be on. Tis not. Nonetheless, I went back into that same situation. And, you know, kind of had the conversation about boundaries. Like, okay, so this is my thing. Like, you know that I like you. Blah, 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 this, blah, 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 that. So we got to play this a little differently. And it started off that way, but eventually got back to what it was. Because once you set a precedent for how you're going to be in a relationship or in any relationship, that's the expectation. And nothing less will be acceptable. And that's kind of where we were. He never said anything. But keep in mind, when you like somebody, you know, and you are fearful that rejecting them or not going along with whatever it is that they want you to go along with, you could lose them. You make adjustments. And you like, okay, I'll make these particular adjustments. So by this time, my friends are over. I got friends that ain't even talking to me no more, really, because of this whole situation. Because they like, girl, this is stupid. Literally. And I'm like, but you don't understand. We're going to be together. Like, I know this sounds crazy, but this is setting up the first couple of chapters of this epic love story that I deserve. Because everybody believes and has believed that I deserve an epic love story because of the person that I am. And I agree. And so I was literally like, this is going to be my epic love story. Y'all just wait and see. And so we continue to go on. We continue to go on. He was present at a very difficult time in my life. Now I'm kind of skipping ahead because everything else is kind of stuffed. I was debating. I hadn't been home. And he was like, hey, when's the last time you've been home? Hey, well, now that I have to give this away, we have family who live in the same place. He's not from Michigan or was not from Michigan, but had family who lived in Michigan. And that's where they were currently. Family, his children, and, you know, all of that good stuff. So he was like, hey, when's the last time you been home? You think about going for a holiday? I was like, you know, I don't really know. So I had a couple of days, and it was the end of the year, and he was like, we should just rent a car and drive. I'll help you drive. I'll pay for half the car. I'll do the gas thing. We should just go. So this is the 23rd of December where we're having this conversation. So I'm like, fuck it. What do I have to lose? And he was like, you know, while we're there, we can talk. We can work out things in our, we can have a conversation. We can have a real conversation where there's no distractions about what's going on with us. So I'm like, you know, an opportunity to be in a car with a man for 12 hours to actually figure this shit out. I'm game. So did it, decided to do it to surprise my mom. Told my dad I was coming home, rented a car, left out on Christmas Eve that morning, got there that evening. I was with my family, so I had access to transportation. Let him take the rental car to be with his family because he was on the other side of town. I think I dropped him off initially, and then eventually I gave him the rental car because I had access to vehicles and he didn't, or whatever the case was. So did that whole thing and was home for the holiday. While I was home, my mother passed, and he had also lost his mother a couple of years prior. And so that was a whole mindset. So during this time, he met my father. My father, being who he is, gave him the 19th degree. Because my dad, the conversation we had later was like, well, when you said that you were coming home for the holiday and you were riding with a friend, I thought you were bringing someone home for me to meet. I was like, well, not exactly, but maybe. And so they met at the hospital the night my mom passed. And I wasn't in the room because I was in the back dealing with that, but my other friends came to the hospital. My best friends came to the hospital. My best friends Brittany and Elle, and Brittany's wife Lisa, all came to the hospital. They were with me during that time, and he also came because we were literally supposed to drive back that next day. But I had called him and was like, "Hey, mom wasn't doing well. I had to rush to the hospital. Don't know what's going on. I'll keep you posted." And so I called later on that night to be like, hey, mom died. He was like, do you want me to come to the hospital? Absolutely. Came to the hospital, met Brittany, met Elle, met Lisa, met my dad. Came back to the house, met my mom, my stepmom. You know, it was just kind of there for me during that period of time. And, you know, although we went through a lot of different things, like, I think that whole forcing me home and being in that space was supposed to happen. Like, it was supposed to happen that way. And it did. And, you know, unfortunately, tragedy bonds people even closer together. Now, I ended up staying home. He ended up driving back. But the funny thing is my dad was like, oh, your friend, he's going back. I would have paid for the rental car for another week. Of course, by that time, we had already resolved the whole thing that he was going to drive back home. So that was a moot point. But, you know, because he was like, well, he can stay here with his family. Like, he doesn't have to drive back by himself. You know, my father is a very considerate person. Not really knowing that in my mind, I'm like, this is the man of my dreams. I'm in love with this man. But he was making all these concessions because this guy was my friend. Anyway, come back. And it's that whole concept of adjusting to my new normal, because now I am motherless. Now we have yet another thing in common. So we go on, we go on, we go on. There's still no major movement in our relationship. By this time, I am completely kind of distancing myself from anybody who doesn't believe that this is going to be a thing. I randomly get a message. I'm coming to the conclusion of this story. So I randomly get a message on Kick from someone. And we started to talk, and they're like, hey, they're asking me questions about my particular situation. I'm like, well, I'm not actually with someone, but there is somebody that I'm really, really interested in, and I've been investing a lot of time. I really think something's going to happen because of it. What I didn't know is that this person who was kicking me knew who I was and knew of the situation that I was in. How he figured this out, I have no idea, because obviously I wasn't posting anything on social media. And then they were like, listen, this person that you're so into is a fraud. I was like, do tell. I've been involved with this person. This person is a user. This person is this. This person is just trying to take advantage of you. This person has done such and such, such and such to me. I really think that, you know, you're a good person and you deserve better. And I'm like, you know, this is extremely left field, because for one, I don't even know who the fuck this person is, randomly kicking me. Eventually, they reveal who they are. And, you know, they show proof. So I received this video one morning from the guy that's like, hey, hope you have a great day. It's like they're laying in bed. It's like giving me these sexy vibes, blowing kisses at me. And I'm like, oh, okay. This is what's up. This is a great way to start my day. Well, he sent that goddamn video to multiple people. It was like this mass message bullshit. And so this other guy had received this message and sent it to me. And so now I have proof that this is some bullshit. And so I go over to talk to him because he was like, you know, you should come over. We should have a drink. We should grab some food. We should talk about this. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, you need someone to talk about. Didn't have this conversation with any of my friends initially because it wouldn't have been a good look. I'll talk more about that in the next episode. But that whole concept of, you know, your friends only know aspects of whoever you're with. And so if you give them all negative shit, then they build this idea of this person based on that. And so then it's downhill. So if I told them anything negative, then they would have been like, mm-hmm, we know. And so it would have been this whole process. So we didn't talk about it. I just had this conversation with this other dude so that I put things in perspective. The guy that I was interested in, let's call him Jay. The guy who called me, let's call him Mark. Okay. So Mark was like, hey, this guy's on some bullshit. I got proof. Let's talk about it. So let me explain that Mark in this situation is not a savior. He is a person who knew that this was a very vulnerable space, and he took advantage of it because he wanted to shoot his shot. I wasn't interested in Mark in no way, shape, fashion, or form. However, it is what it is. So we had this conversation. We talk about it. He's got lengthy conversations. He's giving this guy money. He's, you know, they've been way more engaged in relationship than we are. And so his whole thing is in his relationship or in his interaction with Jay, Mark's interaction with Jay, he was like, you're not going to keep pimping me for shit and not get anything in return. So he put Jay in the hot seat and Jay responded. I never did that because I was in this fear. This is this whole concept of self-worth. I was in this fear that I was going to lose something that I really, really wanted if I ever challenged or pushed back and said, no, I don't want to do this. No, I'm not about this. Or, you know, what am I going to get in return? I did it one time and it didn't really pan out the way that I wanted it to. So I kind of let it go. But Mark and I are different people. So Mark had been intimate with this person in some ways. I don't know the extent of their intimacy. I don't think they actually had sex. They just did sexual things. That's what I'll say. And so he didn't have proof of that. He was just basically saying, you know, all of these different things. He was like, have you ever kissed him? And I was like, yeah, you know, we ain't never really kissed. He was like, I bet I'm a better kisser than him. Like, when you kiss him, you don't feel nothing. But if you kiss me, you'll feel something. Like, I'm a better dude. And I was like, all of this is great, honey. I just came here for the juice. So we had this conversation. So based on this conversation, I mulled over it. I decided to confront Jay. And this is what people do. He turned it on me. Like, we supposed to be friends. And you are going to trust this fag who says this and this about me. And now I'm pissed off at you. I'm like, pissed off at me? Nigga, you have sent the same video to me that you sent to multiple people that obviously is a video that gains some type of reaction. It makes somebody feel a certain type of way. But now it's my problem. Now I'm a bad person because I'm trusting this person over you. Anyway, went through that long conversation. He was like, you know, well, I think that you need some time to cool off or whatever the case is and figure things out. And I'm going to, unlike last time when I fucked up your life, I'm actually going to give you space this time. And when you're ready, you'll be ready and hopefully we can be friends again. I was like, you know what? I think that sounds like the right thing. No tears. But there's no tears because in my mind, I had already mourned the fact that this wasn't going to happen. I was just holding on to straws. And he gave me plenty of straws. It was like that, you got me hanging on a string, yeah. It was like that. That was how our relationship was. Like, when I was distancing myself, he would find a way to be like, you know, maybe we'll be together, maybe we'll live together, or if I'm moving here, it would be great if you moved with me so that, you know, we could build this life. He was moving out of his apartment. He was like, I was just gonna move in with you. Like, all of these things that put me in this mindset of, okay, we're getting somewhere, we're slowly getting somewhere. So after this, we legitimately didn't talk. I had one encounter where I went somewhere and I felt like he was going to be there. I was like, I feel like he's going to be there. Like, the black gay community is so small here. I always joke and say the degree of separation is one blowjob, but that's just a joke, but not really. And so I'm like, I'm bound to run into him. And I be goddamn, he was there. I realized that he was there very early on in being there. I was with two of my best friends and I was like, bitch, we got to go. I can't stay here. I don't give a shit where you take me, but you got to take me up out of here. Cause I didn't drive. I said, we got to go. And so I made my way over there, had a conversation with him, said, what's up? How you doing? Whatever the case is. And I got the fuck out of Dodge and didn't see him anymore for a very long period of time. So I'm good. I'm trying to get out of this situation. I didn't get out of this situation in the most healthily ways, because the best way to get over a man is to get up under or on top of another. And that's what I did. and very frequently. And that was kind of the space that I was in for a long period of time. But I literally had mourned, honestly, the fact that we weren't going to be together. And so this wasn't so bad. I just felt like I needed time apart from him, away from him, to not be around him. And so time passed, because this happened, I want to say mid-summer. This annulment of sorts happened. And I didn't see him. And then I think I randomly ran into him at Target with his cousin, a cousin who I had met years prior when he was in the hospital, because she happened to be here for New Year's that year. So I met her then. So I met her again, or, you know, reacquainted myself with her. We had a short conversation. How's work? Great. I'm getting ready to celebrate my 8th year, but I'm really looking to do something different. How are you doing? Things are good. How are the kids? Things are great. You look good. You look good. Great to see you. Yada, yada, yada. Move on about our business. A couple weeks later, I got an email. It was from him, and it was an apology email. And it basically was like, hey, I fucked up. And let me tell you this. I thought that seeing him in public was going to take me out. I thought I was going to be a ball of tears. I really did. And when I saw him, nothing really happened. I saw him, we had a conversation, and it was good. Like, I think I went up to him, and we had, we talked for like 5-10 minutes. Walked out to the parking lot, talked some more. It was all good. Because we're getting ready to gear towards the new year. So maybe I'll say this. The letter that he sent me, he sent before then, I want to say. He sent me an apology letter. Apparently, he had reached out to one of my best friends and was like, hey, I really want to apologize to Phil. What's the best way to go about doing this? Should I call him? Should I write him? That friend was like, nigga, don't call him. You should write him. And so he wrote me an email. And basically, he atoned for our relationship. And was like, I was fucked up. I fucked over you. I admit to this. I admit to that. I admit to that. I led you on. I strung you along. Blah, 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 this. Blah, 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 that. I hope that, you know, that you forgive me. I hope that you get to a place where we could be friends again. I would really like that. And I never responded to that email, because I didn't deem it necessary. I didn't think that it was necessary for me to say I accept your apology, because I felt like that would put me back in the space. Because see, this is where I learned this. Forgiveness does not mean or doesn't require you to be in relationship with a person again. Forgiveness is what you do for yourself so that you can move on. I learned this lesson there. This is something else I'll talk about. So I forgave him. But forgiving him I didn't feel like he earned the right for me to say, hey, I forgive you. It was just a situation where it's like, I appreciate that he came to this realization. And I moved on with my life. Hadn't seen him. Hadn't talked to him. Was good. Honestly. Was honestly good. Had realized after that there was another friend of mine that he had dated. There was no way of this other friend knowing that I was involved with him. So I didn't hold that against him. But he knew that we were involved, but didn't know how to broach the topic. because he didn't know. Perfectly fine. Didn't sweat it. This friend texted me and was like, have you seen the news about Jay? And I was like, no, what news? What are you talking about? Because at this point, we're in a new year now. So I think I got that email October, November, ran into him in December. This conversation via text was in like April. He was like, I've been seeing on Facebook, on social media, that he passed away yesterday. And I was like, huh? Because even when you don't want to be with somebody, even when somebody has hurt you, you, in my mind, for me, there's no ill will. I had no ill will towards him. So in terms of like death, like I didn't want him to die, obviously. Nonetheless, I was like, no, we weren't. We were no longer friends on Facebook. So didn't get any feed messages or anything like that, because in the process of getting over it, deleting numbers, deleting games, any way that this person could contact me, I eliminated. And so I had no clue. I ended up calling his best friend, because we still played tennis from time to time, which was also not a good idea. You should let all of those entanglements go. And I couldn't get him right away. So I text someone else that I had met through him, who was a mutual friend, but they weren't friends. But they knew each other. They ran in the same group in a way. And he responded, he was like, yeah, unfortunately, it's true. So I told my boss that I may need to leave, but I didn't know how I was feeling. And she was like, do whatever it is you feel is necessary. But I was like, I'm just gonna go back to work. I was like, I thanked everybody for the information. Finally got his best friend on the phone. He kind of told me the story of kind of what happened, and it was true that he had passed away. And I had an emotional moment. Like, I was like, oh. But the emotional moment wasn't like tears. It was like, how do I feel about this situation? I kind of felt like, I saw an interview with Tina Turner, and she did it with Oprah, and this was after she had decided she was going to retire. Oprah, I believe, had gone to Switzerland to do this interview with Tina Turner, and it was right after Ike had passed, or not long after Ike had passed. And she asked her, how did you feel? And she was like, it was like another person died. I didn't really have any feeling. There was concern for my children, but that was it. She didn't go to no services. I don't think she sent no cards of regret. It just is what it is. And I was in that space. I was like, well, how do I feel? Like, should I mourn the loss of someone who used to be my friend, who I really cared about very deeply, who I, for all intents and purposes, was in love with? Like, how do I reconcile how I feel? I decided that I would reconcile it by attending his funeral, which was not in Georgia. So I traveled for his funeral to his birthplace, because he was buried next to his mother. And that, getting through that was a process, but I felt that it was important that I was there for a certain, I needed some closure. And, you know, it was an interesting experience, because people had different relationships with him. So there were some people who were really, really upset. Obviously, they lost a friend. There were other people who were kind of stoic. I found his children to be kind of stoic. And then there were other people who were like, beside themselves, hollering and wailing. I was just there. And I read the obituary, which uncovered more lies. And yeah, I think I literally left it all in that church. It all left there. I had gone back to therapy. We had talked about it. She asked me how I felt. And I was like, you know, I had mourned the fact that we weren't going to be in a relationship for a long period of time. I literally had worked through heartbreak, so I wasn't heartbroken. He passed, and it was sad because he was young and he had children and obviously a host of friends who loved him and a host of family that loved him and depended on him. But for me, it was literally, I'm so sorry that he didn't get a chance to live out life, his life. It didn't play out in the way that he wanted it to play. And that was pretty much it. And that was 3.5 years of my life. So, now you know the story. The next couple of episodes will be what I learned from this. This episode is really long, almost an hour. I normally don't talk this long, but I was in traffic, which lended itself to the story. I tried to make it as cohesive and concise as possible, but giving you enough detail to understand the mental space that I was in. I look forward to dialoguing with my co-host about it and getting their feedback and their insight. It is totally a situation that I have healed from. But there are always residual scars from heartbreak in terms of forging forward. And again, we'll talk a little bit more about that in terms of what I've learned from heartbreak. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. I really appreciate it. I look forward to talking with you guys on social media about this. Anyway, I'm not going to hold you any longer. I'm not going to belabor the hour. I've literally been talking to you for over 55 minutes. This is by far the longest podcast I have ever done. And I promise you that because I've laid all of this out, I'll be able to shorten the next several episodes. This is totally against my concept of micro content. Anyway, follow me. My podcast is now available on over 9 different platforms, all of which I don't have access to. But I'm there. I had somebody who hit me up and say, hey, I just listened to you on Opencast. So if you have an iPhone, there is Apple Podcasts. If you have a Google or Android-based phone, there is Google Podcasts. There's Opencast. There's Stitcher. You can listen to the show in Anchor. So there's so many different ways. I really need my co-host to do me a favor. Give me some feedback on ways that I could get this out there so more people can actually hear what I'm talking about. I know that ranking is important, rating is important. So on your different platforms, on Apple's platform, on Google's platform, give me a couple of stars, give me some feedback, because you doing that allows other people who are in the podcast, who are possibly in search of something new to listen to, they can see it. If I could get on this week's best podcast, that would mean something monumental for increasing my listenership. So just think about it. No pressure. I know people are always pressuring you for ratings. I just need a couple of stars. I mean, you know, if it's only a 3-star type of show to you, that's fine. That's better than nothing. But just the rating itself and the comments kind of gets the word out there that there's some content that someone probably hasn't found that might be useful and beneficial to their lives. Anyway, I love y'all for real. Not like Monique. Talk to you later. Peace.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.